2-2 pitch. Swing and a long drive. Deep left. Way back. Gone.
Welcome in to another Baseball America podcast. I'm Kyle Glazer. We are here to break down the 2023 postseason. The NLCS and ALCS are underway. The Phillies lead the D-backs 2-0 in the NLCS. The Rangers lead the Astros 2-1 in the ALCS. We've had a lot of exciting games early, maybe not on the scoreboard, but there's been some big moments that have certainly generated a lot of excitement. We're going to look back at everything that has happened and look ahead at what's to come as both the Phillies and Rangers have a chance to punch their tickets to the World Series as soon as this weekend. To do that, I am joined by my friend and colleague, Jeff Ponce. Jeff, thanks for joining me today.
Hey, Kyle. Happy to be here and talking some postseason baseball.
Absolutely. So, Jeff, as we move into this, you know, long weekend, technically we're recording on a Thursday, but we'll count it as all part of the weekend to come. We have the Phillies and the D-backs kicking off game three today at 5:07 Eastern and 2:07 Pacific. The Phillies came out and just took it to the D-backs games one and two. Game one, Kyle Schwarber homered on the very first pitch of the game. Bryce Harper added another on the fifth pitch of the game. The Phillies were off and running. Trey Turner homered in the first inning of game two. We saw those crowds at Citizens Bank Park just go absolutely bananas, and the Phillies really jumping out early as they did put the D-backs in a hole. It's difficult to win in Citizens Bank Park no matter what. But when you get off to starts like that, it makes it that much more difficult. Now the series shifts to Chase Field in Arizona, which safe to say is not quite the same home field advantage. At the same time, just simply getting out of Citizens Bank Park should make things a little bit easier on the D-backs. What are you looking for here as the series shifts to Arizona?
Yeah, I think it's just a matter of the Diamondbacks finally sort of getting some momentum here. It feels as if over the first couple of games, you know, we've just seen Philadelphia come out. And I think this has kind of been a constant throughout their playoff runs so far in 2023. They're just out there, you know, trying to throw knockout blows pretty early. And, you know, each time they're falling into deeper and deeper holes. And, you know, I think part of it is just Bryn Fatt and then the bullpen, which was really good. The bullpen in particular last round in the divisional series. Is, you know, if they can step up and sort of keep the game close, because I do think, you know, that's the thing with this Diamondbacks team. If they're within shouting distance, they're a team that can score runs very quickly, and not just with the home run. They have enough speed and base running, etc., that a couple balls to the gap, you know, can score a run pretty quickly with this team. Unlike maybe some other teams in the playoffs that have more of a, you know, base cloggers, etc. But the starting pitching has to show up. You know, Fat has to, if he's going to go three or four innings and they're going to sort of lean on the bullpen a little bit more in a game like this, you know, he has to be pretty clean through three or four innings. And when I say pretty clean, I mean, you know, a run or two, I think, is probably acceptable. We can't have, you know, another situation where it's five or six runs over the first two or three innings without, you know, the Diamondbacks countering to that. And I think when we look on the other side of the ball too, in terms of, you know, who the Phillies are rolling out there, Ranger Suarez has, you know, maybe isn't the most dominating pitcher in baseball, but he is a guy that's proven time and time again in the playoffs. He can come out, give you quality five, six innings, what have you, and set up their bullpen for success. And we know that they have a lot of firepower, you know, on the back end of that bullpen. It's just a matter of maybe the Diamondbacks getting out to an early lead here and maybe putting some pressure on the Phillies finally and kind of flipping the momentum. Have they even had a lead in this series? I don't believe they have.
No, they have not. Again, the Phillies jumped out to first inning leads with the long ball in both games. And I will say, give the Diamondbacks a little bit of credit. You know, in game one, I thought what was interesting was because we saw the Diamondbacks come back from deficits against the Brewers both games of that series there. And the Phillies jumped out to a 5-0 lead through five innings. Again, it was just off to the races. And I thought the D-backs did a good job of hanging in and chipping away. Again, they were able to halt the momentum a little bit there in the middle innings. They chipped away, turned it into a 5-3 game, and they brought the tying run to the plate in the seventh, eighth, and ninth innings. So they did a good job staying competitive, but that's where the Phillies bullpen, which, you know, for so many years was just a dumpster fire, for lack of a better term, has been absolutely locked down this postseason. You know, we saw Sir Anthony Dominguez, Jose Alvarado, and Craig Kimbrel come in and shut the door. And then game two, again, the D-backs were able to stop a little bit of the bleeding early. Again, it was 2-0 going into the sixth. But this Phillies offense right now, they just feel inevitable. You know that they are going to pour it on in some form or fashion more often than not. And I think that's been what's so much fun to watch about this Phillies team is, and we've talked about this extensively, 1-9, you have to have everyone able to contribute. Johan Rojas hasn't done a whole lot, but okay, 1-8. I mean, this Phillies lineup is as good, as deep, as dangerous as any team in the postseason. We've seen everyone contribute in some way or another. And I think right now, when you talk about, yes, these are tremendously talented players, but they're tremendously talented players locked in and playing their best. It's very, very difficult to keep up with this offense.
Yeah. No, I agree with that. And, you know, I think the other thing here, too, is this is an opportunity for Arizona, obviously, to come home and play back at home. But Philly won't have sort of that driving momentum of the fan base and the quiet roar that is constant at Citizens Bank Park. So, you know, I think there's some advantage there, too, that they got to take the bulls by the horns, so to speak, in the next two games here and, you know, try to flip the series back and gain some momentum. And then, you know, you're playing with house money and you see how things go when there's some pressure against the Phillies. But I think that's one of the things, too, that we've seen is throughout this postseason. I know Matt Eddy on the back end had sort of put this stat out there, but there is an opportunity here if things don't get more competitive in these CS series, that we could see one of the shortest, meaning the least amount of probable games actually played in the playoffs. So it would be nice just to see each of these teams. It was kind of nice last night to see Houston sort of finally take it to the Rangers and have them lose a game. I think we need some of that intrigue for, you know, these playoffs to really kick off because though we've had some close and intriguing games, we haven't necessarily had those tight series altering sort of moments yet.
This is very, very true. Before we move on to the ALCS, one thing I think that does deserve some attention here for the Phillies, so much is being talked about with their offense, and deservedly so. Again, you look at Bryce Harper and what he's done for the second consecutive postseason. You look at Kyle Schwarber now having 9 home runs in his last 19 postseason games, including some absolute moonshots. Nick Castellanos becoming the first player with back-to-back 2-homer games. I mean, this offense is incredible, but this pitching staff has been absolutely dominant this postseason. The Phillies have a 1.39 ERA in 8 games this postseason. I mean, their total line's insane. 71 innings, 44 hits, 11 earned runs allowed, 73 strikeouts, only 15 walks. We've seen it in games 1 and 2 here in this NLCS. Zach Wheeler and Aaron Nola were both great. You know, Zach Wheeler going out, 6 innings, 3 hits, 2 runs. Doing what he does best, and the Phillies' quote-unquote A bullpen of Dominguez, Alvarado, and Kimbrel coming in and shut the door. But Aaron Nola then coming back out with 6 scoreless innings, only 3 hits allowed in game 2, and really some of their less heralded relief arms coming in and being equally as dominant as well. Jeff Hoffman, Matt Strom, and Orion Kerkering. And I think that's something else here that is contributing to the Phillies' dominance that we need to talk more about. They went in and shut down a historically great Braves offense. And yes, 5 days off, it's going to mess with hitters' timing. You still have to make pitches and get those guys out. The Phillies did it. Again, the Marlins are certainly not the world's best offense, but look, they're in the postseason. You still have to pitch well. And we saw the D-backs jump on really, really good pitchers for the Brewers. We saw them jump on some very talented pitchers for the Dodgers, although we know they certainly weren't their best. I mean, this D-backs offense was rolling coming into this series. Through the first two games, the Phillies have just shut them down, allowing 3 runs combined in 2 games.
Yeah, you know, I think that's the thing is maybe because of health, we didn't necessarily see throughout the season just how loaded this Phillies team is. And I think that is one of the things that kind of sticks with you. You know, you mentioned Rojas being, you know, the weak link in terms of the lineup, but he gives them a totally different dimension in terms of, you know, how they can structure and who they can put in the outfield because of how much ground he covers, how good he is out there. So, yeah, this is a team that I think every time they get to the playoffs, everybody in the baseball world has kind of maybe overlooked them throughout the season and then gets a second look and it gets a greater appreciation for just how well this team was put together. I think just structurally, this is a strong team, well-balanced, et cetera.
Yeah, so that actually kind of leads me into, you know, a discussion a lot of people are having is, you know, the Phillies being quote-unquote built for the playoffs. And I absolutely do agree. There are some teams that are built better to succeed in the playoffs because they're more well-rounded. If you're one-dimensional, we've talked about this. Anyone who's listened to the podcast has heard this spiel before. You have to be able to hit the home run. You have to be able to string together five consecutive hits. You have to be able to take a walk. You have to be able to hurt the opponent 1 through 9 or minimum 1 through 8. You have to have good rotation arms. You have to have a good bullpen. You can't have one or the other. You have to be a complete team. I think there is something to the idea that the Phillies are built for the postseason, not just talent-wise, but we see their personalities. And we've talked about this. This team plays with fire. They play with an edge. You know, we've seen teams in the past sometimes roll in and just lack energy. The Dodgers in 2022 against the Padres come to mind. Dave Roberts openly talked about it. You know, being able to match that energy is very, very difficult. You know, how much credence do you give to the notion that the Phillies are quote unquote built for the postseason? Because I personally do give it some credence, both in the way they're constructed, but also just the personalities they have.
Yeah, I think the personalities are a big part of it. But I think when you look at this team, you know, 1 through 26, it is fairly veteran team. And that is in all different phases. It's a veteran rotation. You know, they have some guys they've went out and gotten, like a Zach Wheeler up front, Nola, some of they've developed, but they have frontline starters there. You know, they have a variety of options in this bullpen. And I think that's one thing that they made a point of doing over the last year. They went out and they you know, acquired Alvarado. They went out and they acquired Kimbrel. You know, they drafted Kirkring. So they've added a lot of firepower to this bullpen, and they've had some good teams over the years that I think were really flawed at the back end of that bullpen, and it cost them a lot of wins. I don't have the numbers in front of me. I want to say if we go back to like 2021, that the bullpen was like a major reason for, you know, them not succeeding in the way that they did. Might even been as far back as 2019. I think you also look at the lineup. Not only do they have impact bats, guys like Harper, guys like Castellanos, guys like Schwarber, of course, that can hit home runs, get on base, do those sort of things, particularly, you know, the on-base stuff with Schwarber and Harper, two of the best in the game. They have role players that are younger players that they might have either acquired, like a Marsh, a guy that they developed, like Stott, that all fit into a variety of roles in that lineup. They're all pretty solid all-around players, and they're good defensively. So, you know, I think that's a big portion of it. And then I think we look at this season, and they spent a large chunk of the year without Bryce Harper. That was magnified because of the injury to Reese Hoskins right before the season. And ultimately, that second half lineup, when Harper, you know, slides into first base, allows Schwarber to be a DH, which is what Schwarber really is. And, you know, the rest of the lineup sort of, you know, came into place like that, whether it was like Rojas coming up and providing some defense, et cetera. So I think a lot of it is the veteran core, that they've gone out and they've gotten players that, you know, have been through battles, you know, that have had their 10,000 hours in the major leagues or whatever you want to say, in terms of seeing the pitches and having the experiences of the moments. So, you know, that sort of stuff isn't too big for them. And they have horses. I mean, Zach Wheeler is a legitimate ace, and Nola is a good pitcher, and Ranger Suarez is a good pitcher. You can go right down the line. You know, I just think it's just a well-balanced team. And when you start to take a look at maybe the Dodgers or the Braves, who had more regular season success, I think you could say 1 through 26 that you can really argue that the Phillies are a better team. You know, the Dodgers may have the two better players, the Braves may have Acuna, may have the better player, but when you look at the rotation, you look at the bullpen, you look at the positional depth and how everything fits together, I think the Phillies just are a team that's equipped to beat good teams. That's really what the playoffs are about. I know there's been a lot of talk about chance and circumstance and all that sort of stuff. They're a team that's built to beat other good teams.
Correct. And the Rays are not, which is something I raise every single year. There's a reason they can't get out of the division series except in a COVID year, just as an example. Before we wrap up, there is one final key here I want to discuss for the Phillies, and that's Aaron Nola. He's so critical to this team's success. You have Zach Wheeler, who you feel great about the front of the rotation. You know, the back is solid when you have Ranger Suarez going at the number three spot. But, you know, Aaron Nola is such a critical piece of this rotation. And, you know, there was a little bit of concern. He did not pitch well in the postseason. I should say the end of the postseason at all last year. He pitched well his first two games, the wild card series, the division series. But in the NLCS, the World Series, he had an ERA up near 10. 9.69 ERA, did not complete five innings in any of those three games, and came back out this year and looked like a guy who was tired after last year's postseason run. He had an ERA up near 4.5. That's his third worst ERA of his career. Had the lowest strikeout rate of his career dating back to his rookie season. His walk rate went up a little bit. I mean, this was Aaron Nola was not terrible this year, but he wasn't Aaron Nola. It was really his worst season in a lot of ways. I don't know if you'd say in his career, but probably since back to 2016. And there was some concern when you looked at he did not pitch well at the end of the postseason last year. And this year he was not great, and he didn't finish strong either. You know, this was a question mark. Which version of Aaron Nola are the Phillies going to get? He has come out and been absolutely dominant in the postseason. Has allowed two earned runs in 18 and two-thirds innings. He's 3-0, holding opponents to a 182 batting average, a 182 batting average. It's a 0.96 ERA. I mean, he has been lights out. And I think that's one of the things here that has helped really solidify the Phillies' chances. When you're getting true ace Aaron Nola, I mean, yeah, you have a 1-2 punch that pretty much any other team is going to struggle to match. But the Phillies weren't getting true ace Aaron Nola throughout the NLCS and World Series last year and throughout the regular season this year. So the fact he's come out and pitched like he has, I think that's been a huge and underrated part of the Phillies' success and why their outlook looks so bright right now.
Yeah, and I think, you know, something that we maybe overrate, and I would have to go back and look at the numbers specifically and look at examples, but I can think of so many examples in my mind over the years where there's veteran pitchers that maybe have a down year and then have a lot of success in the playoffs, you know? And I think it's having those guys that can go five or six innings. It keeps you that I always look at how the bullpens are managed. And I think that when teams are really bullpenning games, it's so short-sighted because keeping those guys fresh. So when those key moments late in series, as you get deeper into the playoffs or as you get into a World Series and everything is on the line, you know, totally, you can utilize those guys in different ways. You can ride them a little bit more. They're willing for you to do that too, right? I think that's probably a key component of it versus a lot of these teams that are trying to finesse it early in the playoffs. And I think it's something that you can do during the regular season when you want to give some starters a rest. I understand that you know, running a bullpen game or two throughout the season, it makes sense. It's a long season, but I think it's such a key component of why the Phillies have had success is they do have more of a traditional starter back end of the bullpen setup. And those guys that can get key outs if the starter only goes forward two thirds or five innings. And if they're not riding those guys, you know, every other game, they're fresh and they're, you know, Thompson obviously has his options available to him. And I think that's such a key part of this is the strategy and how teams are managed and how they're built to be managed a certain way in the playoffs, right?
Oh yeah. Look, a bullpen game or using an opener is a worst case scenario. You have no other options. Choosing to throw a bullpen game over, you know, even just a cromulent fifth starter who's got an ERA in the mid fours and give you five innings is a terrible decision to make every single time. So yes, you need to utilize real starters in the postseason. And that's certainly an edge the Phillies have. And I actually want to talk a little bit about bullpen usage more when we discuss the Rangers and Astros series, because that's been a really key part of that, how Bruce Bochy managed his bullpen and his starting pitchers in the first two games. Before we do that, Jeff, real quick, Phillies are up 2-0 going into game three today. Do you see any scenario the D-backs come back here? And do you think the Phillies wrap this up as soon as Friday?
You know, I'm not going to bank on them wrapping this series up on Friday. You know, I do think there's a loss that's going to be built in here, whether it's today or, you know, the next game. You know,
Over 60% of Americans believe that the most useful second language in the U.S. is Spanish. In my scientific survey of people in baseball, I would put that number at somewhere around 99%. Spanish is spoken in every clubhouse in the U.S. at the minor and major league level. And if you want to take some time this fall to brush up on what you didn't learn in high school, no problemo, because with Babbel, you can start speaking a new language in just 3 weeks. You can start speaking a new language with Babbel. Why Babbel? Because it works. Instead of paying hundreds of dollars for a private tutor or fooling yourself with language apps that are a little more than games, Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are designed by over 150 language experts to help you speak a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel is designed by real people for real conversations. All of Babbel's tips and tools for learning a new language are approachable, accessible, and rooted in real-life situations. They delivered with conversation-based teaching. Here's what I love about Babbel. It isn't learning from a book. It presents different ways for you to cover the same material so you learn. You hear the words. You read the words. You speak the words. And then Babbel tells you if you're speaking them properly. And it all begins to click. Comprende? Studies from Yale, Michigan State, and others prove that Babbel is better. For instance, one study found that using Babbel for 15 hours is equivalent to a full semester of college. With over 10 million subscriptions sold, Babbel's real language learning for real conversations. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners to get you started right now. Get 55% off of your Babbel subscription, but only for Baseball America listeners. Go to babbel.com/BA. That's 55% off of a Babbel subscription, babbel.com/BA. That's BABBEL.com/BA. Rules and restrictions apply.
Looking for tickets to your next game, concert, or show? Make shopping for tickets more convenient with TickPick, the original no-fee ticket marketplace that brings you the best prices for all the events that you love. And now TickPick is partnering with Zip, so you can shop now and pay later. Zip allows you to shop at TickPick and split your payment into easy installments. Visit TickPick.com or install TickPick on the App Store and use promo code ZIP20, that's ZIP20, for $20 off your first purchase of $199 or more with Zip. Zip can only be used for U.S. purchases, and Zip may charge a fee at checkout. Certain merchant product goods and service restrictions apply. Visit Zip's terms of service at www.zip.co-us. Loans through the Zip app were originated through WebBank, except for Zip-originated loans in Colorado, Nevada, Massachusetts, and Maryland. Check out with Zip at TickPick.com.
I can't totally dismiss the D-backs. I think this probably goes five, maybe six if things go really well. But I'm not expecting a sweep. I think, you know, we'll see how things play out in a game where the Phillies don't jump out to an early lead. If that happens in one of these two games or the Diamondbacks jump out to an early lead, not that they have a huge home field advantage, but it's just an advantage not being in Philadelphia and having to deal with Red October or whatever you want to call it. So I don't want to dismiss them yet. You know, I was too quick to dismiss the Phillies in the first round, so the Braves are going to sweep them. So I'm calling for no more sweeps in the playoffs. I don't want sweeps either. That's the more baseball, Kyle.
Yeah, I think we can agree. We all want more baseball and more high pressure situations. I do think the D-backs will get one game here in Arizona, but I don't think the series is going back to Philadelphia. I do think it'll be, you know, Phillies win this series 4-1 and move on to the World Series. All right, Jeff. So we're going to move ahead into the ALCS. We're going to take a quick break and then break down the rest of the Rangers-Astros series. Welcome back to the Baseball America ALCS-NLCS Review and Preview Podcast. I'm Kyle Glazer alongside Jeff Ponce. All right, Jeff, we broke down the NLCS between the D-backs and the Phillies, everything that's happening, what we're looking forward to as we move into games 3 and 4. Over on the American League side, the Lone Star rivalry series between the Astros and Rangers. The Rangers jumped out to a 2-0 lead, winning both games in Houston. The Astros struck back and jumped on Max Scherzer to win game 3 last night to make it a 2-1 series. Before we look at game 3, I want to go back to games 1 and 2 because one of the things that jumped out to me is Bruce Bochy once again demonstrating a masterclass in how to handle your starting pitching and your bullpen. And, you know, people talk about the postseason being luck and a crapshoot, yada, yada, yada. We've been over that. It's not. I think anyone who says that is using it as an excuse and a crutch. Sometimes you just get beat, and there are elements of roster construction and in-game management that play better in the postseason. And Bruce Bochy is a master of managing his bullpen and knowing his starting pitchers. And I want to go back to game one where the Rangers jump out early, 2-0. Jordan Montgomery is cruising. Again, he's not getting swings and misses up the wazoo, but he's not allowing hits. He's getting ground balls. He's working quickly and efficiently. And he goes back out for the fifth inning with a 2-0 lead and gets to face the top of the Astros order for a third time. And I just had the thought, how many managers would have pressed the panic button and just pulled the plug and said, oh, we can't let him face Jose Altuve, Alex Bregman, and Yordan Alvarez a third time. And we've seen teams do it. I go back to what the Dodgers did with Rich Hill in game two of the 2017 World Series, where Rich Hill was pitching great and they unnecessarily panicked and pulled the plug and it moved their bullpen up. And what ended up happening is Kenley Jansen had to pitch two innings on the second of back-to-back days. It was just a horrendous mistake that really screwed them. And I thought that Bruce Bochy showed, no, this is what you do. If your guy is rolling, let him pitch. And he went out there and he pitched really well, retired the side in order because that's what he'd been doing all game. Sent him back out for the sixth again to face four, five, six in the order. And again, did the job, rolled him back out for the start of the seventh. And he let a really good veteran pitcher pitch until it was time to pull him. He didn't panic just because, oh, it's the third time through the order and, you know, arbitrarily decided the name to pull him. And then again, in game two, what really stood out to me is when the Rangers were up 5-2, Nate Eovaldi's on the mound. And again, I just thought in that moment in the fifth inning, when the Astros loaded the bases, it's a 5-2 game. You have Yadier Diaz coming up. And then the top of the order, how many managers, again, would have pushed the panic button and gone out and yanked their starter? And Bochy stuck with Nate Eovaldi because he knew that of all the pitchers he had available to him, Nate Eovaldi is still his best option on the mound. What did Eovaldi do? Struck out Yadier Diaz, struck out Jose Altuve, got Alex Bregman to ground out, escaped unscathed. I think those first two games really showed that at the end of the day, you have to trust your guys. And we know that. And yet so many times we see managers or front offices want to micromanage everything and be kind of control freaks about it. We just saw it this postseason with John Schneider and what they did with Jose Berrios. I really thought the first two games were a masterclass in this is how you manage your team. And when you do it this way, your pitchers believe in you, your bullpen believes in you. And he knew the bullpen he had couldn't cover four or five innings. He needed length from his starters. He trusted them to get the job done, and they did. That's how you manage in the postseason. And I really hope everyone who is wanting to get involved in baseball strategy watched that and understood that and saw the benefits of that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think it goes back to what I was saying before. It's the benefit of game one and two. They get six innings out of their starter. And I think it was a great point that you made. A lot of managers would have been fine getting five out of each of those guys. They get that out of there, and then they're able to then go in and sort of go with their seventh, eighth, ninth inning guy, Spores, Chapman, Leclerc. It's tried and true. That's what the formula is. And, you know, everybody's going into roles that, quite frankly, they're comfortable in and they've done before in the postseason. Maybe not Spores, but – you know, I think it's such a huge component, you know, and I'm somebody who loves pitching, and I certainly with pitching prospects, like I can look at a guy who maybe goes four or five early on in his professional career. Once that guy gets up to the major leagues, he's got to go six innings. And I would say that's one of the biggest lessons I've learned over the last couple of years is liking a lot of these smaller, high efficiency, low release height, 6 foot sort of right-handers. They're just not built to handle a bunch of innings and go deep into the season and be able to pitch in the postseason. You don't see those guys this time of year, really. And there's a reason behind it. You know, big leaguers are big human beings. And I think sometimes when we're evaluating, we're ranking prospects, we often overlook that, you know.
Yeah, and again, I think it goes back to, you know, Jordan Montgomery and Nate Eovaldi. These are veteran pitchers who have pitched in the postseason and have been great all year. You have to trust them. And also just knowing who's in your bullpen and what they're capable of. Again, I'm going to use the 2020 example with Kevin Cash pulling Blake Snell and not trusting him. Nick Anderson was gassed by that point in the postseason because he'd been used so much in the DS and the CS. And again, it's just, oh, I'm going to automatically pull my pitcher rather than let him face a guy another time. It's like, no, you have to know who is in your bullpen too. And that's a big part of it. And I think Bruce Bochy understanding that, you know, that Spores, Chapman, Leclerc, not that Chapman's been great, but that's the three guys he has, he can kind of trust, and letting his starters do what needed to be done to get them to that point. Again, you just have to trust your guys. You have to know your guys. And Bruce Bochy did that better than I think any manager among his peers when he was with the Giants. It's a big reason why a lot of times the Giants were unexceptional in the regular season, but they won three World Series in 5 years. His ability to know his pitchers, know when to pull them, have a feel for how to use his bullpen is really unparalleled. And we saw that on display in games 1 and 2. And the Rangers offense, we've talked about it, the highest scoring offense in the American League, 1-9, these guys can bang, and they're really, really capable of jumping on anyone at any time. We saw that against Justin Verlander and Framber Valdez, two really good pitchers. Jeff, moving into game 3, the series shifted to Texas, and look, saying something's a must-win game is a cliche unless it's literally a game to avoid elimination, but you know, if you go down 3-0, you're in pretty bad shape. The Astros came out, jumped on Max Scherzer, who hadn't pitched in about 5 weeks. He was not sharp. Just what were your takeaways from this game, and what did you see change maybe for the Astros?
Yeah, I think, you know, they finally ran into a pitcher who wasn't his best self, frankly, and they took advantage of it. They're also a team, and I know that we heard about this in the broadcast ad nauseum, that plays well on the road. I think we probably heard, if you played a drinking game last night and they told you to drink every time they brought that stat up, you would have been drunk by the fourth inning. But I do think it was a good point. I mean, sometimes teams, funny enough, do perform well on the road in certain circumstances. You know, they had a big series at the end of the year there, you know, where they took down some games, and it's still Texas. It's not to say that there's not going to be a hearty amount of Astros fans probably still in the building. I've had a friend who has season tickets as a Rangers and more or less said that. So, you know, it's a little bit more of a split crowd too than I think we're probably used to in some other venues. But, you know, Jordan Alvarez had a Jordan Alvarez game. You know, I thought that Michael Brantley had some great at-bats early on in the game. And, you know, the pitching was fine, right? I mean, that's sort of what the issue's been over the first couple of games for the Astros as well, is they just haven't gotten the same sort of performances that, you know, we're typically used to seeing out of the Astros rotation. And Javier was pretty good, as Javier is, it seems, during the playoffs this time of year. So he was kind of cruising. We'll see if they can replicate that formula. I do think that this series, in comparison to the Philly series, has been thinner margins for error here. Obviously, you know, we've had a 2-0 game and then a 5-4 win by the Rangers. Knowing the Astros, knowing their experience, knowing how many times that they've been here, they're not even close to out of it. And I think I'd be shocked if this series doesn't go 6 or 7 games. I would imagine that the Astros win another game or two in the series, minimum.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it would be a mistake to count the Astros out, even down 2-0. Last year in the World Series, they were down 2-1 and went home and took the rest of the series. Yeah, I mean, again, I think a big part of this was just Max Scherzer, for completely understandable reasons, was sure. Not sharp. He had not pitched in 5 weeks. You know, we saw even the first at-bat of the game, Jose Altuve hit a ball nearly 400 feet. I mean, crushed it. It just was to center field. It was a long flyout. And then we saw, you know, he hits Yordan Alvarez with a pitch to open the second inning, you know, walks Kyle Tucker, throws a wild pitch to allow the first run to score. I mean, just things we don't normally see from Max Scherzer. And that opened the door a little bit for Martin Maldonado's, you know, single there. You know, we saw a leadoff homer again, you know, walks, wild pitches, hit batters. These are not normally the things that, you know, Max Scherzer does, but again, he was rusty. He had not pitched in 5 weeks, and that showed. I do think that the Astros did a good job of holding that early lead. There were a few moments where Texas was kind of getting back into it. You know, they were down 5-0 right away. They scored 2 in the 5th, and the Astros responded with 2 more in the 7th. The Rangers come back and score 2 more in the 7th. Again, Josh Young hitting a pair of 2-run homers there. The Astros respond and score again in the 8th. So I think the Astros did a good job responding. Christian Javier, I highlighted when we talked about this. I forget if it was in our postseason preview podcast or our wild card preview podcast, but I talked about Christian Javier was going to be a key for the Astros this postseason, because you have Verlander, you have Valdez, but Christian Javier, we talked about similar thing with Aaron Nola, was not good this year. You know, how much of that was the fatigue from a deep postseason run last year? You know, only he knows the answer to that, but they needed the best version of Christian Javier. And we saw in the Twins series, his control wasn't great, but he allowed one hit and didn't allow a run. And at the end of the day, that's the name of the game, is keeping runs off the board. Again, last night against a really, really good Rangers lineup, 5 2/3, 3 hits, 2 runs, 1 walk, 3 Ks. I mean, his pitch efficiency was fine, 85 pitches into the sixth. He is pitching like the better version of Christian Javier. And that is so huge for the Astros. If they don't have that, they probably might not win this game. And their outlook certainly would be a lot worse. So I think that's one of the underrated things here, is getting the best version of Christian Javier back just makes such a difference. And it's kind of a fulcrum point here for the Astros, what happened in game three.
Yeah, I think it is. You know, when you have a guy like that that can come out and miss bats with his fastball and just keep guys off balance, especially against a really good lineup like the Rangers. You know, and we saw that as soon as the bullpen came in, Hector Neris gave up a couple of runs. So, you know, these are two very formidable lineups. And I know there's a lot built up about Yordan Alvarez, et cetera, but there's so many scary bats in that Rangers lineup between Garcia and Seager and now Young coming up with big hits, et cetera. They're another team where like 1 through 9, they can really beat you.
Yeah. And that's one thing to consider here with the Rangers too, is, you know, Marcus Semien hasn't really gotten going yet and they're already in good shape. I mean, if he starts heating up, I mean, that's going to make a huge difference. You know, we saw Nate Lowe, you know, come up with 2 hits last night. You know, if he can get going, that'll help. I also think now this is, you get to the point in the series where, and when we talk about the importance of starters, having 4 quality guys you can throw out there. And that's one thing the Astros and Rangers both have. You look at Jose Urquidy versus Andrew Heaney going game 4. Again, neither of these guys are studs, but you don't have to do a bullpen game. You're not throwing openers. You have accomplished veteran starting pitchers who have started postseason games before and have done well in them. When you look at this matchup, Urquidy versus Heaney, what are you going to be watching for?
I think once again, it's who gets out to the early lead. You know, it seems like that's been a major component of all these playoffs, is sort of drawing first blood and then playing from ahead, playing with a lead, just in terms of how you can manage the game, et cetera. So, you know, in terms of the matchup, and I think it's a general more just thing within the series that we're sort of waiting for that game where they really start to trade blows, you know, and it's 2 runs here, 2 runs there, 3 runs here, 4 runs there. And, you know, it's a back and forth sort of battle. We haven't seen a game like that. I think if it's going to happen, it's probably going to be in this game. You have 2 starters who can be, you know, above average to, you know, good starters in the major leagues, definite rotation pieces, but also guys who are a little bit inconsistent and they're facing off against good lineups. This could be maybe a higher scoring game than we've seen, and kind of fall in the same vein as last night, you know, with the starter quality just wasn't as good as it was in game 1 or 2 on either side of the ball, really.
Yeah. One of the big things I'm going to be watching for is what the Rangers can get out of Andrew Heaney, because we talk about this Rangers bullpen. If you can get to their quote unquote a bullpen, you know, Spores, Chapman, Leclerc at the end of games, you feel pretty good. But the middle's a little bit shaky, and we saw that last night. You know, he ended up having Bruce Bochy brought in, you know, John Gray and Martin Perez in relief. You know, Chris Stratton did not pitch well, and that's, you know, kind of who Chris Stratton is. I think with them, you know, Andrew Heaney has been more of a, again, not an opener, but more of a let's just get 3 or 4 innings type of starter for them. You know, he only pitched 3 2/3 against the Orioles in the division series and his start there, and the bullpen took it the rest of the way. He has not completed 5 innings in a start since August. So all of September, all throughout the postseason, he has not completed 5. And if you're going to go into this game and just hope to get, call it 3 from Andrew Heaney, maybe even 4, and then you say, okay, if that works, you know, we can go Spores, Chapman, Leclerc, who all didn't pitch yesterday, they'll be fully rested for 7, 8, 9. Who's going to take down the fifth and sixth inning for the Rangers? And what's that going to look like? And I think that's going to be really interesting to watch if Andrew Heaney can get off to a good start against this Astros offense, because as you mentioned, he can be very inconsistent. But also, what happens in those middle innings, and is that where the Astros jump? They're able to feast on pitching that is not the best of the best. This is an incredibly good offense that has been in this position over and over and over again. So I think that's going to be my biggest thing I'm watching, is what does Andrew Heaney give the Rangers, and how do they bridge that gap between when he's done to their A relievers?
Yeah, agree. You know, I think that's a big portion of it for sure.
All right, Jeff. So with that, again, in theory, this series could wrap up this weekend, although I think we both agree this is probably going 6, maybe 7, just given the quality of these two teams. Rangers are up 2-1. They have home field, essentially. I mean, there's 2 more games in Texas, 2 more games in Houston, but with the edge they have, they're in really good position. Mm-hmm. Who do you think wins this series, and in how many games?
I think it's going to be Rangers in 7. I think that's what I said before the series. I'm going to stick with it now. I think the Astros probably win tonight. Rangers take game 5, and then we'll see what happens in Houston.
Yeah, so certainly going to be
the end.
Certainly going to be a really, really fun, enjoyable series. Again, you know, Jose Urquidy, you know, gave the Astros 5 2/3 solid innings in Minnesota. And if he can give them something like that tonight, that'll be a huge advantage. And again, you know, Dusty Baker versus Bruce Bochy, 2 of the best managers to ever do it, 2 Hall of Famers. It's going to be fun to watch the chess match here tonight and as the series goes down to the wire. Jeff, it's been a pleasure talking playoff baseball with you as always. Thank you for joining me today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on, Kyle.
All right, everyone. That'll do it for another Baseball America podcast. Go ahead and give us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, whatever platform you're listening on. We'd love to hear from you. For Jeff Ponce, I'm Kyle Glazer. Thanks for listening. Enjoy the postseason, everybody.